session number 11107.
Mr. Nutter, real one. Can you tell me when you were born?
29th of December 1906.
And whereabouts were your family living at that time?
Cornsmouth, Leon.
And that's in Spennymoor?
No, it's outside of Spennymoor, towards Coxall.
It's in this area?
It's in
then.
This area, yes.
What was your father's employment?
Miner.
I see. And did he have many brothers and sisters?
My father?
Your family? In your family?
My brothers and sisters. Yes, I had three brothers and one sister.
Were you the eldest or the
youngest? Eldest boy. I have a sister older than me. My sister was the eldest.
Can you tell me a little bit about your education?
Well, I just had an ordinary board school education, you know. What
did that consist of?
You went up in different standards and got a high education all the way. I finished in the top class anyway.
What were the sort of things that you learnt in the board school education?
The 3 hours. Reading, writing, arithmetic, that was about all.
When did you leave school?
About the 23rd of December 1920.
And what age were you?
Not quite 14. 14 on the 29th.
And did you have any choice about the job that you were going to go into?
No, there was no choice here then. It was mine and nothing else. Mine or the army, probably.
Did you mind at all going into the...
Brought up, you know, this was your standard of living, wasn't it? It was by second nature to go to the mines.
When did you start work in the mines?
To the colliery. That's outside of Spennymoor.
This is a private firm, was it?
It belonged to the Wadehill Steel Coal Company. Had a big headquarters at Whately Hill, had a colliery there as well. Only had them big works over Bessemer.
Was this the colliery that your father worked in?
Yes. But he'd worked all over, my father. There was like seven sons, you see, and my grandfather. They could more or less move where they liked. Well, having a big family, they all got a job in the pit, you see. It was an advantage having a big family then, yes.
Did your family work as a unit in the pit? Did you work together?
Yes, well, there'd been a big family. There was enough to provide two for each shift, you see.
What was the advantage of... how many shifts were there?
Well, it's a roll three. Day shift, early morning shift, day shift and night shift.
And how long was each shift?
There was only two matters. Up the 21 strike, it was 7.5 hours. And after 21 strike, it went to 8 hours.
And you said that two members of the family
worked... Two in each shift, you say. Generally, two men places in the pit.
What was the advantage of having two men working each shift?
Well, yeah, I don't really know. Of course, Mary's on the side of safety as well, you know, probably.
What do you mean by that?
Well, one could look after the other in case of anything happening, couldn't he? Yes.
Was there also a consideration if there was an accident, not all the members of the family could be killed or badly injured in this?
Oh, probably, yes.
Was that ever discussed and talked
about? No. You never thought about it. You know, I never thought of doing it when you went down.
Can you tell me what your job was when you started?
I was a trapper boy, opening the door to let the pony putters in and through, in and out on account of the air ventilation, you see. If them doors weren't closed, the air didn't travel to the faces.
What was your reaction to that work?
Well, you took it as part of life. You never looked at anything else, did you? Not in a mining community. It was your way of life, wasn't it?
How long were you on your own by the trap door?
Oh, well, there was always somebody coming in and out with tubes.
Was the pit well lit there?
Oh, no, you only had a little oil lamp. A safety lamp. There was no electric lamps then when I started. It was all oil lamps.
Did you receive any breaks from the
work? No, you got your bit when you could. Them days.
So you had to stay there for the full 7.5 hours?
Yes.
How much were you paid?
Well, at Burnage, you got a 12-month rise, you say, from being a debtor, so I couldn't really go a rate back that far. But I know my first pay for 3 days was a pound and a penny. And my first pay for six shifts the following week was £2.03.
Was that considered to be good money?
That was
at the
good
time?
Money then, yes. Then the strike, of course. They lost the case and went back for less money and longer hours.
You're talking about the 21
strike? 21 strike, yes.
Did conditions worsen with the after the 1926 general strike?
No, the conditions are just the same, like, you know.
Yeah, I mean the pay.
Oh, yes, the pay. Yes, pay and hours. Less money, longer hours.
What hours did you have to work after 26?
8 hours. From going down to coming up.
And what about the take-home pay for a week's work? What was that?
Well, it varied if you were on piecework, you say. What you could make. And, of course, some parts of the pit you can make a lot of money, and other parts of the pit, and you got what they call the minimum wage. If you couldn't make a certain amount, you got that amount, you see, more or less like a day standard of living wage. But it was called a minimum wage then. If you couldn't earn what, if the conditions were so bad that you couldn't earn it, you got paid this minimum wage.
What was that? Can you remember?
No. But I know my first, when you got 21, you know, you got onto the bit what they call the big wage. It was 6 and 6 pence after your shift. That was a big dental wage. But if you were on piecework, why could I earn more, you say? Depend on conditions.
Did your job change at all in the pit?
Lots of different jobs. Oh, yes, right through. Yes.
Now, you were born in 1906, and that meant that if you started work at 14, that was 1920.
Yes,
so, 19 years in the pit before the war.
Before the war, yes. I had various jobs then.
Did you always stay in the same pit?
Up the war, did, yes. After Tudor didn't start anymore, you know, one of the things, after the 21 strike. So I was out of work nearly for 2 years. Then I went to 30M. Then I was there at the war. Then I was there after the war. And then when 30M finished, I was 6 years adrift down at a place called and I was there when I was 65.
Before the war, did your own circumstances change? Did you get married, for example, before the war?
I was married before the war, yes, with two girls before the war.
But when was this? When were you married?
I was married in that church at the top of Spennymoor with a clock on there, St Paul's.
What year was that?
1931.
And when did you have your two children?
1932. I had three altogether, 1932, 35 and 38. I had three when the war was declared, aye.
Was it easy to bring this family up on the miner's wage that you had?
Well, just depend on the way you lived, didn't it? You know, if you were a boozer or a gambler or something like that, where I was steady. I raced pigeons, mind. I was a pigeon racer. Raced Norman pigeons. Up the war.
Would you say that the family were quite comfortable then?
Well, you know, as comfortable as you can make them. But nothing to throw away.
Did your wife work at any time?
No. She worked after the war in the where that big factory is now. It was the ROF factory there. She worked in the canteen.
Can you tell me about the approach to war in 1939? Before war was declared, had you expected there to be a war? Had there been any talk about war breaking
out? Not really, you know. I don't think I'd have joined the territorial if you were known there going to be a war.
So you weren't really aware that a war was going
to... No, not really. No.
What did you make of all the talk in the papers and on the radio about what was going on in Germany and Europe?
I don't think we bothered much, you know. And then, being in reserved occupation, naturally we thought we wouldn't get called up.
You mentioned the territorials just now. When did you join the Territorials?
Before the end of 1939.
That was before the war was...
Yeah, why? As I told you, we thought it was going to be a fortnight's holiday out the pit.
Can you explain why it would be a fortnight's holiday?
Why, a fortnight at camp. That was going to be the holiday. Of course, you still need drills and route marches and that, I suppose. I never did a one, you see, because the war being declared it fell through.
So you never got to leave?
I never got to the camp.
Can you remember the day that the war was declared?
Yes. It was one Sunday morning. I was in the drill hall at the time.
Had you been called to the drill hall?
No, we were stopping there. We were there all day, but they were letting us go home at night and come back on the morning.
How long had that been going on before war was actually declared?
Oh, just from the Friday, 2 or 3 days. Just from the Friday.
And what was going on at the drill hall during the day? Was there any specific things that you had to do?
No, not really. Just doing drills and getting organised, I think. And then, of course, there was the 10th Battalion to reform out the overstrength of the 6th.
What was the reaction of the men when you heard that war had actually broken out?
Well, a little bit apprehensive, I think. Wouldn't know what was going to happen.
Was there any speculation on how long the war would last?
Yes,
like
everybody
that?
Thought it would be about a 12-month job. 12-month holiday.
Why did people think that?
I don't know, but I had that impression that people thought that.
Did you think the same?
Yes, definitely. Yes.
When you were at the drill hall, had you been given your kit and army?
Oh, uniforms? You had your kit when you went in the Territorials. You had your full kit, rifle and everything.
How long actually had you been in the Territorials before war broke out? Was it a matter of months or weeks?
About 9 months, month or two. It broke out in September, didn't it? Mm-hmm. Somewhere about March.
How did you manage to do any training?
Oh, yes, we'd done training.
Can you tell me what training you had done?
Well, just arms drill, and then there was a miniature shooting range under the... And then there was a firing range at Whitburn against Sunna. We also go and fire a course there. I've been on that range at Whitburn.
When did this training take place? Because you said that you hadn't had the 2 week camp. So when did you go out and train?
Why, building up, think we're going to camp, you say. The weeks ahead, building up to go to.
Was it done at weekends?
Yes. You'd have so many drills in and all, you say, in that period, to qualify to go to camp. Every time you went near an appearance, you could go through the week and all and do drills, you say. And every time you made an appearance, well, it was clogged down here, and well, you qualified to go to camp then if you had enough drills in.
I see. Well, how many drills did you have to go to?
30, I think it was. Somewhere about 30.
So that would be 30 weekends or evenings?
Yes, through the week. You could put maybe a couple in during the week. Build it up.
What were the officers like?
They were all right, very nice, yes. Yes, all nice officers.
Were they experienced men from the previous war?
Some of them were, yes. Some of the sergeants were, and all the old-time sergeants. They were, were in the 488 AMO.
But not all? Some of them
were?
Oh,
no, some of them weren't. Not.
Was the Territorials broken down into companies and so on?
Platoons.
Platoons?
The company said there was different towns had the different companies. Spennymoor had say company. Barnet Castle had a company. Hartlepool had a company. Croke had a company.
What company was Spennymoor? Can you remember?
C Company.
I see. And you were in one of the platoons in C Company?
One of the platoons in C Company, that's right.
What was your NCO like? The officer?
Sergeant Ward, he was nice. Like, well, you worked in a pit with him, you see. You were poly with him. You were mates, more or less.
Would you say that there was strong discipline before the war in the territorials?
Well, to a certain extent, yes. You couldn't act the goat or nothing like that. It'd be pretty on your toes.
Did you know a lot of the people?
I knew practically all of them, apart from the officers, like.
Were the officers local men as well?
Some of them were. The colonel came from Concert. That's out the area a little bit. And them two officers, he belonged Spennymower. And Lieutenant Gill, he belonged Croke. And Captain Kipling, where he belonged Durham Road, he belonged Spennymower. Captain of C Company. He belonged Spennymower.
Right, when war was declared and you were at the drill hall, can you tell me what things occurred there once war had broken out? I think you mentioned that you had to go in during the day and then you went home at night.
Yeah, so after war was declared, you say, I used to sleep at the drill hall and there was a big house taken at the top of Spennymower for the officers' mess. Well, after I was chosen to be the batman to the adjutant, I went up there and stayed there, you see. So I really missed the atmosphere among the lads. I was with officers all the time.
What did you think about being chosen to be batman?
Well, I thought it was a good idea. Because there was two or three to be chosen from, you see. And the sergeant major recommended us, and I knew the sergeant major, you know, in civvy life.
Do you think that influenced his recommendation?
I could have done, yes. Could have done. He got killed. No, he got killed before Dunkirk. Sergeant Major Minnis.
So this was right at the beginning of your army career then, wasn't it? While you were still at Spennymoor, that you were made batman to the adjutant. Yes. What was the adjutant's name?
Captain Hutchinson.
And what duties did you have to do for his captain?
Well, I had to go in on the morning with a cup of tea for him. Then clean his thumb brown and his buttons and his shoes. And then I was on hand if he wanted anything personal done, you know, any errands running or anything like that. But we were in there preparing their mails and all, you see. We also prepare the mails in the officer's mess. There was a mess cook and a mess sergeant. They were under him. And we were acting as waiters. We had to serve them, you see, with the dinners. Jeez.
Was the officer's mess very formal?
Yes, oh yes, very.
They dressed for dinner in the evening?
No, not that way, no. But, you know, they had their own napkins and everything. Yes. Own serviettes and serviette ring and everything.
Where were you billeted at this time? Did you still come home in the evening, or were you
actually staying there? No, I was billeted in the big house at... It had been Kenmas, a big furniture firm in Spennymower. And they took it over as officer's mess at the top end of town. Well, we were still there, you see.
Whilst you were batman in Spennymower, was there any training that you did along with the rest of
the men? No, I didn't know. No charge for raising nothing.
But so how did you fill your time when you weren't doing
Well, cooking and cleaning, keeping the place clean, you know. More like a houseman.
When you were at Spennymoor, the 6th Battalion, I believe that split, didn't it?
Yes.
Can you tell me what process occurred
there? It was over strength, and they took us all down to a field below the drill hall, and the officers shouted, if your name was shouted out, you went to the other side of the field, and that was formed the 10th Battalion, because that was the over strength of the 6th. And then to make them up to strength, they got some conscripts after we went to Shales from Sheffield area.
Mm-hmm. You stayed in Spennymoor in the 10th, is that correct?
Yes, the 10th stayed at Spennymoor until the 6th moved out from Bishop Auckland. Then we went to Bishop Auckland in their place. I don't know where the 6th went, so I think they went to Chippy Norton.
How long were you in Spennymoor following this split of the battalions?
Well, just about a fortnight.
I see.
Then we had a big house for the officers' mess in Bishop Auckland Marketplace.
Can you tell me a little bit about your accommodation in Bishop Auckland? Was there a camp there, or were you in billets still?
No, we're in billets. They were all in chapels and, you know.
What was the billet that you were in like?
I was in this private house with the Bend officers' mess, you say.
And was this a very large house?
Yes, very big house in the marketplace.
Were all the officers billeted together?
All the officers were built together in there. Yes.
And did you have any change of duties at all at this point, or was it much the same as it had been?
Yes, just the same, just looking after the officers' welfare.
And you had no additional duties outside?
No. You were excused all them duties. The officers needed, did you say?
But what was your reaction to the life that you had now in the army? How did you get on with it?
Well, I took to it all right, yes. Oh, yes, I took to it all right.
You found the discipline easy to take, did you?
Yes, oh, yes.
What about the food and the rations that you were given?
Well, no good, no very good. Yes. Especially in the officer's mess.
Was there a perk for being a batman in the officer's mess in that respect?
Yes, yes.
In what way?
Well, being excused duties and, you know, you weren't out slogging in all weathers.
And what about the food that you mentioned just now? Did you get more food or was it
just
quality?
Well, it was up to the discretion of the cook. I think we also get a few little perks.
Would it be better than what you had had in civilian life?
Well, yes. Yes. Because they were rationed, it went in civilian life then. Yes, we didn't know so bad.
How long was the battalion in Bishop Auckland for?
Till just before Christmas, December sometime, I went to Shales.
I see. So you're only there for a comparatively short
time. Yes, a few weeks, yes. Not a long time.
So December 39, you moved off to South Shields, is that, or North Shields?
South Shields.
South Shields.
South Shields. Uh-huh. And they were building in the schools there, and the officers' mess was in Westmore Village, in somebody Redhead's house. I know he was a shipbuilder. That's where we had the mess there.
And what was the mess conditions like there?
Champion, fine, yes. Lovely.
How did he get on with the adjutant, Captain Hutchinson?
Very well. He didn't trouble you very much. It was all right. Nice.
We say he didn't trouble you very much. What do you mean?
Well, you know, you weren't at his beck and call all the time. It was only you just needed when it was really necessary. He looked after himself a lot. Yes.
Did you feel he treated you fairly?
Oh, yes. And you got half a crown a week off them. That was a big perk and all. That was your batman pay. Half a crown was half a crown, them days.
Was that discretionary, or was he obliged?
It was left to the... They were supposed to give you it.
They were supposed to?
Yes. Because they were only on a shilling a day pay, you know, them days.
Okay. When you were at South Shields, were there any other things apart from your batman duties that you were involved in again, or was this once again the same sort of situation you had been?
Oh, just about the same, yes.
Did you not do
any? We seemed to have a bit more leisure though there. You could. There was a place, I forget how ran it, but you could go in during the week and put your name on a sheet of paper. When you went in on the Saturday, there'll be a name and address where you could go for your tea, probably. They were very good, the people of Shales. We went to Dr. Black's once. I was only once out. I was only once at a free Sunday. And we went out to Dr. Black's. Had a nice day with a fellow called Dr. Black. Very nice.
Were these recreational days out quite frequent then? It was every Sunday you could do that?
No, not every Sunday, not. No. Well, we also try and scheme it so, among ourselves, so somebody could have a couple of, you know, in the turn, and we did the extra duties. If a batman was out and his officer showed full, well, we went in place, you say. Stood in place for them. Because there's only maybe to look for something they were looking for, a pair of shoes or something.
When you went to, for example, Dr. Black's, you mentioned a moment ago, that would that just be you on your own, or would there be a number of
lads? There was another mate, a male lad, a chap called Anderson. He worked in a mess. Belonged to Warburton.
And what sort of things would you do in these homes? What was sort of given to you?
Well, just your dinner or your tea, and some generally also give us some cigarettes. Well, Dr. Black did give us cigarettes. We left Shales at 2 o'clock in the morning to go to France, and I think all Shales was at the station. Oh, very, you know, the people in Shales were very, very good to us. Very good.
There was no sort of friction at all?
No, no friction at all, no. No, they were very good.
You mentioned going to France. Before we reached that, were you given any sort of military training up to this stage in your army career?
Just ordinary arms drill and firing on the firing range and that.
Not as a territorial now, this is when you were actually in the DLI. This was after the war had been declared. That you.
Oh, I didn't know. No duties. After I was a batman, I was solely there to look after him.
So the training you're talking about just now was actually done when you were in the territorials before you became a batman?
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about that training? You mentioned that there was drill. Are you talking about basic drill here?
Yes. We used to do rope marches, a bit of rope marches, and different positions of line, shooting and that, you know. That was all.
These route marches you mentioned, what sort of distances were they over?
Oh, 5 or 6 miles.
Did you find any difficulty in
No, not at all. I was wearing a good walker. I had a dog, I walked miles with it.
What about the light infantry pace? Did you have to practice?
Oh,
that?
No, it seemed to come natural to you.
Do you have any problem with sore feet and blisters?
No, but these poor lads from Shales, it was a pity fun to watch them. I'll tell you a funny thing. There was quite a few of us, you know, besides me, got transferred to this. And I'll tell you where we were based at, on the canvas at Warminster. And our NCOs was all the red caps. And they were the NCOs. We were under canvas and we had to go to the barracks. It was a big tank corps there, and all Malaysia had built when he was Secretary of War, for a big tank corps. And we had to go, it was a matter of about a mile away. And when we fell in, if there was two or three Derhams on the front, we were miles in front of the other ones, you know. But anyway, after a while, the NCOs used to come round and say, which lot were you in? Oh, the Derham sergeant, get away at the back then. So that's how they solved that problem. We used to be miles ahead of them.
Were you proud that you had this ability to
oh, yes. People? Oh, yes. I never had no trouble with my feet. None of the locals. The only lads we thought suffered was these poor lads from Sheffield. Well, you say, well, we used to have your boats who worked in the pit. But they hadn't poor lads. Oh, damn.